Okay, well, you know what I'm going to say next, so get your Bible out and let's get ready. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. We're getting pretty close now to the end of the book of Vayikra, or Exodus, so this is the last couple portions. And it goes like this, chapter 25, verse 1, and as you know, it says, often at the beginning of the Parsha, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe, and what did he say? Sometimes that is the first unique word, but in this case, tells us where he did this. So it says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, Bahar, Sinai, in Mount Sinai. So that's the name of the Parsha. And here's what he said, speak unto the B'nai Israel, and say unto them, when you come into the land which I give you, then shall the land, not just you all, but the land will keep a Sabbath unto Yahuwah. So in this case, it is a Sabbath, and that has the root word that means seven, so it has to do with 7 years. So it's numbers of years, rather than some other kind of mechanism or counting unit of time. 6 years you shall sow your field, and in 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in the produce thereof. But in the seventh year, it'll be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath unto Yahuwah. You shall neither sow your field nor prune your vineyard. And this, of course, is called the Shemitah for the seven. And what's interesting about this, and I think this is one of those things, probably the fundamental issue and point of this Torah portion, has to do with trust. Because you think about it, and by the way, the people of the land failed and cost them. But the trust is, you got to trust in Yah to do what he says he's going to do, if you'll do what you say, or what you've agreed to do. Let the land go in the seventh year. That which grows of itself of your harvest, you're not to reap. The grapes of your undressed vine you shall not gather. It is a year of solemn rest for the land. And the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you. So the Sabbath produce of the land shall be food for you. Now that confuses folks a little bit. And I'll admit it does sound a little bit difficult, because if there's if you're not going to gather in your grapes or otherwise tend to your fields, what's the produce going to come from? And I guess the answer is he will provide. And there's part of the rub. And it says, and this will be food for you and for your servant and for your maid, for your hired servant, for the settler by your side that sojourns with you. And as for your cattle and for all the beasts that are in your land, they shall all the increase thereof be for food. So their produce, their increase is still for food as well. And you shall number 7 Sabbaths of years to yourself. 7 times 7 years. So we're talking about multiples of 7. First we got the 7 year Shemitah. Then we have another multiple of 7 years. 7 times 7 years. There shall be unto you the days of 7 Sabbaths of years, 49. So 7 times 7, 49. Then you shall make proclamation with the teruah of the shofar, the ram's horn, on the 10th day of the 7th month. 10th day of the 7th month. Oh yeah, that would be this time that is referred to as a day of covering, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. You shall make proclamation with the shofar throughout all your land. So the blast is the teruah, and that's the name of the sound that's played on the shofar. Or a horn is what some of them say, but it's a ram's horn. Then you shall hallow the 50th year. So we blow the shofar on the 10th day of the 7th month, Yom Kippur of the 49th year. And then the 50th year that follows is hallowed. And you may recognize this verse. It says, and then proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. So some of you, if you don't remember that, it's not taught in the cesspool schools anymore. Back in the days when we were a free nation, there was a thing called the Liberty Bell. It was in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And the Liberty Bell has this verse, Leviticus, essentially chapter 25, verse 10, written on it. Proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It is to be a Yovel. So the 50th year is called Yovel. In English, it gets rendered as Jubilee. Unto you, and you shall return every man unto his possession, and return every man unto his family. So the concept here is, this is the great reset. The real one. Not the kind that's being done by the communists, and the socialists, and the globalists, and the word controllers, and the satanic host. This is the one that is real. Every 50 years, there is literally a reset. And we'll see what that means. But it's every man returns to his possession, his family, lands, and so forth. The Yovel year, that Jubilee, the 50th year will be unto you. You are not to sow nor reap that which grows of itself in it. Wow. You don't gather in the grapes from the undressed vines. It is a Yovel, a Jubilee. It will be set apart unto you. You shall eat the increase thereof out of the field. Eat the increase thereof out of the field. In this year of Jubilee you shall return every man unto his possession. So family lands, in other words, that are passed through the tribes, and if they have been sold, we've seen this elsewhere, we're going to see it again here, they're not sold in perpetuity, they're sold essentially what amounts to a lease, a declining balance lease that always expires on this 50th year. So if you sell the land and there's 10 years to go, that's how long it is until it returns back to the person or the family that sold it. In this year of Jubilee, every man shall return his possession. And if you sell anything unto your neighbor, or you buy your neighbor's land from his hand, you shall not wrong one another. So what it's going to say here is, here's how it's calculated, here's how you do it. According to the number of years after the Jubilee, you shall buy of your neighbor, and according to the number of years of the crops, he will sell unto you. So essentially what it's saying is, you know, the land, you're going to have, say, 47 years until the next Jubilee. That's how many crops you're going to get, of course, minus the Shemitah years in there. And so you sell based on a proration of those 47 out of 50 years, or whatever the number remaining might be. And here it says, according to the multitude of the years, you increase the price, and according to the fewness of the years, until it goes back, you decrease or diminish the price of it for the number of crops that he sells unto you. So essentially what you're doing is you're selling the produce during that time. You shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your Elohim. For, right, you know it, Ki Ani Yehuah Elohim. Therefore, he says, you shall keep my statutes, and do them, and mine ordinances. So we've got, you shall keep my hukati, and also my ordinances, mishpati. Remember that little E at the end means mine. So my statutes, my ordinances, and do them. And you will, in fact, dwell in the land of safety, safety. And the land will yield her produce, her fruit, and you can eat, and will, until you've had enough. And you'll dwell there in safety. So essentially what you have here is, I guess I've seen this, and I think it's an interesting statement. This is another proof of divine authorship. Now, why is it that the sages say that? Because basically no human would do this or be able to make this promise. You walk in obedience to me. You do this thing that seems counterintuitive, and in fact, the land will yield its produce to you. You'll have enough. It doesn't sound like it. You're going, how can I possibly get through those 7 years in between and that 50th year especially without it? Answer. Trust in him. And if you say, well, what will we eat in that seventh year? Behold, we can't sow, we can't gather in our increase. Answer, trust. Then I will command my blessing upon you, he says. So here's the answer to the question that we kind of laid out. How does this work? The sixth year is going to be something else. If you walk in obedience, just wait. In the sixth year, it bring forth produce for the next 3 years. That's a bountiful harvest. Now, why? Well, if you think about it, you've got a year where you're laying off, and then you got a year where you aren't going to get anything, because remember, it takes a while for the crops to grow up. So you've got to have enough for basically 3 years to get through this extra time. And you shall sow the eighth year and eat the produce, the old store, until the ninth year, right? You got to get through that whole year, too. Until her produce comes in, you will eat the old store. And here it comes, the reference again to this idea of the Yovel, or the Jubilee year. The land is not to be sold in perpetuity. The land is mine. You're sojourners. You are strangers. You're settlers with me. Land is mine. And in all the land of your possession, you shall grant a redemption for the land. So if the brother that you have here is waxing poor, he sells some of it because he hasn't got the wherewithal to get through it, then his kinsman that is next unto him shall come and redeem that which his brother has sold. If a man has no one to redeem it, and he's waxing rich, and he finds that he has sufficient means to redeem it for himself, well then, let him count the years of the sale thereof, and restore the surplus, the overplus, to the man to whom he sold it. In other words, he is going to redeem it, buy it back. The man is going to have to allow that to happen, and he gets back the prorated portion. He returns to his possession. But if he doesn't have sufficient means to get it back for himself, then that which he sold shall remain in the hand of the one that bought it until this year of Yovel, Jubilee, and then he returns unto his possession. So we got the picture. He repeats it a couple times in different ways so we understand. You do not sell in perpetuity. You're simply selling a lease that always expires on the same date, on this Jubilee year. Now, on the other hand, it says, if a man sells a dwelling inside of a walled city, a house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it was sold. So he's got 1 year to redeem it. For a full year, he has the right of redemption. But if it's not redeemed within the space of that full year, notice it's not on a particular date, it is 1 full year from the date he sells it, then the house that is in the walled city is now made sure in perpetuity to the one that bought it throughout his generations. It does not apply. It does not go out in the Jubilee. So walled city is the special case. The houses of the villages, which have no wall around them, they're reckoned with the fields out in the country. In other words, the same rules apply to them as with the Jubilee. They may be redeemed. They go out in the Jubilee. As for the cities of the Levites, the houses of the cities of their possession, well, the Levites, in turn, they have a perpetual right of redemption. So wherever the Levites are, their stuff, they have a perpetual right of redemption. If a man purchases from the Levites, then the house that was sold in the city of his possession, that shall go out in the Jubilee. So here's an exception to the exception. For the houses of the cities of the Levites are their possession among the B'nai Yisrael. The fields of the open land about their cities may not be sold. That is their perpetual possession. Now, if your brother is waxen poor and his means fail with you, then you shall uphold him as a stranger and as a settler. He shall live with you. So he, in other words, even though he's your brother, he's got a problem. He is to be like a stranger or a settler. He lives with you. You do not take usury or interest of him or increase. You don't charge him a 10% on his loan or a mafioso type rates or do what the IRS does or anything like that. Nope. You do not take interest. You are to fear your Elohim, that your brother may live with you. You shall not give him your money, your kesef, your silver, upon interest, nor give him your victuals for increase. Okay, I'll give you a meal now, you're going to owe me 2 meals next year. No. I am Ani Yahuwah Elohim, who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your El. All right. Now it says, if your brother is waxen poor with you, and he sells himself unto you, you shall not make him to serve as a bondservant, as a hired servant, as a settler he can be with you. He shall serve with you unto the year of Jubilee. Then he shall go out free from you, he and his children and his family with him, and return to his own family. Unto the possession of his father shall he return. So he, again, even if he's sold himself into your possession because he needs the money and the work, then he still goes out at the Yovel. They are my servants, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as bondmen. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but you are to fear your Elohim. Now, as for your bondmen and your bondsmaids, whom you may have of all the nations, the goyim that are around about you, of them you can buy bondsmen and bondsmaids. Moreover, of the B'nai, the children of strangers, rather, of the children of strangers that sojourn among you, them you may buy, and their families that are with you, when they have begotten in your land, and they are allowed to be your possession. So the rules that we've seen elsewhere having to do with bond servants apply to them. You may make them an inheritance for your children after you to hold for a possession. Of them you may make, you may take your bondmen forever, but over your brethren, the B'nai Israel, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. Now, if there's a stranger who's a settler with you, and he gets rich, and his brother is waxing poor beside him, well, he can sell himself unto the stranger who's a settler with you, or to the offshoot of a stranger's family. And after that he is sold, he may be redeemed. One of his brethren may redeem him. Or his uncle or his uncle's sons may redeem him. Any that is nigh of kin unto him of his family may redeem him. Or if he's waxing rich, of course, he can redeem himself. And he shall reckon with him that bought him from the year that he sold himself unto the year of Jubilee. So one more time, we're going to get a similar understanding. If he has sold himself into bond service, you look up until the year of Jubilee. The price of the sale is according to the number of years that remain. According to the time of a hired servant, he shall be with him. If there's quite a few years, according unto them, only he gives back the price of his redemption out of the money that he was bought for. And if there remain just a few years until the year of Jubilee, then he shall reckon with him according to the number of years he gives back the price of his redemption. So, more years cost more to redeem, less years, it's cheaper. As a hired servant, year by year, shall he be with him. He shall not rule with rigor over him in your sight. That's an interesting phrase. He shall not rule with rigor over him in your sight. Now, Rashi's comment on this, I think, is probably a reasonable one. In other words, he's saying, if you see it, you now have an obligation, a duty, to say something about it. And if he's not redeemed by any of these means, well, then he shall go out in the year of Jubilee, he and his children with him. For unto me the B'nai Israel are servants. In other words, they're mine. They are my servants, whom I brought forth out of the land of Egypt. Here comes the signature line, Ani Yehuah Elohekim. I am Yehuah, your El. And then chapter 26. Now, we're only going to go into here a couple verses, and then we end up with the one of the most famous parshot next week in Leviticus. It's called Bechukotai. But this is how this portion ends and sets it up. You shall make... have we ever heard this before? You shall make no idols, nor shall you rear up a graven image or a pillar, nor shall you place any figured stone in your land to bow down unto it. I wonder if that means you can't make an AI silicon god and bow down to that. Well, that would be what I might suggest would be the corollary here. It doesn't say that explicitly. So people say, well, no, that doesn't count. I can bow down to ChatGPT or my alien AI god anytime I want, and it may be the last thing you do. Anyway, because he says, for Ani Yehuah Elohekim, it's signed. Listen to this one. Does he ever say this elsewhere? I kind of think so. Anyway, you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, my mikdoshi, Ani Yehuah. Keep my Sabbaths, reverence my sanctuary, Ani Yehuah. And with that, folks, the Torah portion ends. And again, we're setting up the end, essentially, of the book of Leviticus next time. And let me emphasize it one more time. This idea of the level of trust and faith that's required here. We're going to see when we talk about some of the corollaries and the places where the land eventually got her Sabbaths during the time of the occupation and the exile in Babylon and so forth, they didn't do it. They did not have this level of trust and faith that was required, and it ultimately cost them. And I think, this is my take, that we're going to see that it is going to require a similar level of faith to deal with what is coming for us. And I can't help but think that the reason why we are still looking at this and studying it and hopefully taking it to heart is that what he is saying to you, if you expect my protection, you're going to have to trust in that. And that is a tough, a tall order sometimes.